Hi, and welcome to The Foxhole, a show that brings you insights into hot topics, lifestyle design tips, and tactics for success. So today on The Foxhole, we have a guest, Matthew Eisner, who I'm very excited to be chatting with. I know, Mike, you've known Matthew for some time, and Matt's an expert in building and scaling early stage startups. He has consulted and advised in the acceleration and investment space and is currently doing advisory work with investments in cryptocurrency and blockchain, which will be our topic for the day. So let's talk about crypto.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
So we cryptocurrency is kind of a common topic on the show, but we've never stopped and talked about really what it is. We just skip straight into making fun of it. So I thought it would be awesome if we could get like a high level overview of like what is, when people talk about crypto and cryptocurrencies and blockchain and all of that stuff, like what are we really talking about here? Like what are the basics in this whole space?
Well, first of all, it's a scam. No, I'm kidding. Well, that kind of remains to be seen. So I don't blame you guys for knocking it. So I mean, really,
I should say it's like overall, it's very like, it seems like something that has so much promise, and like on paper, and when you philosophize about decentralization and what is possible, there's a lot of optimism around that stuff. But there is something about like, many of the companies and people involved in it right now are
scamming. Well, we'll look at it from both angles in terms of why there is some validity around this and why there's certainly a part of that's just because there's validity and because there's high valuations, scammers are attracted to that. I'd say the one overarching thing to kind of keep in mind as we're just talking about all of these things is that there will be huge crashes and burns in this space. But that's very, very similar to if you look at the dot-com bubble. And what I'd say is this is potentially a very similar kind of phenomena to what you're having in the dot-com bubble. There's a lot of similarities between IPO markets back then and ICO markets now. And what I'd say, obviously, these ICO markets are for companies that often don't have products. But what I'd say is you're basically seeing a higher risk appetite kind of investor class because they've already been some huge returns and a similar sort of dynamic in terms of maybe half the rate of companies actually succeed in this space that did in the dot-com boom. But if you look at the companies that succeeded then, they are now the largest market cap companies in the world.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And it also seems like in terms of where, you know, something I think about a lot when it comes to crypto is that there aren't many areas of innovation right now where like significant paradigm shifts can happen. I don't think that another Facebook is going to necessarily come along and out Facebook. I think in terms of at least social media and sort of the concentration of traditional web power into the hands of a handful of like big companies, like the big four or whatever, you got Amazon, Apple, Facebook, Google. I think if you're going to create another company that's of comparable size to those guys and that are competitive with those companies, it's going to have to happen in a space where there's a brand new platform or a whole new sort of like way of doing things almost, right? So I think augmented reality is an area where there's going to be significant opportunity for like gigantic titan company making. And I think that in the crypto space, like you said, there's going to be probably a handful of Google-sized companies that come out of it. But it's so hard to see. I mean, even something like Uber, how many people imagined Uber ahead of Uber happening? Where in retrospect, it's so simple. You're like, yeah, push a button and a car shows up and takes you wherever you want to go. That's a very simple idea. But I feel like so many people, it's so hard to see where like the big innovation is going to happen and what's going to like make its way into like a mass consumer kind of market. But that said, like what is different? Like what's fundamentally different between like a crypto based business and a traditional web based business?
Yeah. And so what I'd say is kind of, and just the fundamental difference between kind of crypto and kind of traditional web in general is that, so web is excellent in terms of transferring information. So you put up a website on a server, and it's very, very easy and relatively simple in terms of the networking that goes into actually making it possible to deliver that website wherever it needs to be delivered in the world. Where traditional web really falls short is when that exchange actually has value attached to it, and that value needs to be transacted. The mechanisms to do that in terms of kind of consensus and verification and escrowing and all of these sorts of securities that you would want to have in terms of when you are, having sensitive financial data or really sensitive data in general in kind of a database are things where traditional and really it's a centralization versus decentralization sort of question at its very core.
Is that really like when people talk about decentralization, like all these crypto companies that are emerging, none of them are running on, say, like Amazon Web Services. They're all distributed applications that are running on like people's devices and syncing up and...
Well, and so this is a very important sort of distinction that I think is a good place for us to kind of start in and maybe breaking down some of the terminology here a bit. So there's a few different types of kind of distributed, decentralized projects that you're currently seeing. And most of these can go through ICOs because decentralized currency makes a lot of sense in a decentralized system. And a portion of that is currencies. So Bitcoin is a great example of that. It was the first really decentralized kind of use case that, it was the one that everyone kind of knew about before the massive ICO market boom last year and kind of just general crypto market boom last year. So Bitcoin is really purely meant as a currency. But what Bitcoin does very, very well and the issues when we were talking about kind of transfer of information versus transfer of value is that Bitcoin has a great model for how it verifies transactions and how it stores that information. So because that information is decentralized, it means there's no single server that can be hacked and compromise that information. So basically the database, because the database is reflected in so many different places, you can't hack the database unless you control 51%+ of the servers in that database, or the processing power in that database, rather. So that's a very difficult kind of proposition when you're talking about how many people are currently using and mining Bitcoin. What Bitcoin didn't do was provide an infrastructure where other people could create similar apps and similar kind of verticalizations or use cases where, so maybe it's not necessarily transferring currency, maybe the use case is more something of removing a middleman from a process where normally you have an arbiter in a contract or a deal or some sort of conditional payment. And so what Ethereum basically did was take that infrastructure and kind of the verification and what's called consensus, so basically the agreement of all of these databases that this record should be added to all of our databases, because once it is, it really can't be changed. And what Ethereum basically did is create a development toolkit and a language that developers could basically build similar applications to Bitcoin, but not necessarily just for currencies. And so those are distributed apps, so dApps, as they're often called, or decentralized apps. And so you have currencies, you have dApps, and then you have Ethereum, which is itself basically a protocol. And so protocols are where true value really is in this space in terms of when a company is really justified in raising an astronomical sum of money in an ICO, it's usually because if 50 dApps will build on that protocol, and there have been 50 plus companies at least that have built on Ethereum, you can start to see, well, if those companies go and are able to deliver tens, hundreds of millions of dollars of value to their customers and have a token that's used to transact through through their platform, then you can see how much value potentially these protocols can actually start to generate and where their kind of market caps can potentially be justified. But it's still very astronomical and it's extremely high risk because a lot of these companies are pre-product, which is just kind of eyebrow raising to anyone from a traditional venture background.
Could you maybe break down, like, what is decentralization and what's important about
that? Yeah, so there's, I'd say, kind of two ways to look at decentralization that I found particularly useful in terms of kind of understanding this space. And I should say, I'm probably not the most amazing person to explain this just because it is somewhat technical in terms of how it works. But in principle, so there's kind of two scenarios where being decentralized really makes a lot of sense. One is in basically any scenario where there's a middleman. So effectively you have some sort of deal maker or some sort of matchmaker. And basically that person is inherently to be delivering the value of bringing these two parties together in a market, taking some sort of commission for that. However, if the information that that matchmaker has that they're using to match these two people together could be kind of processed by some sort of platform to basically match those two people themselves and allow them to have a safe environment where they can transact, which is very difficult on the internet because you have all sorts of scammers and kind of people accepting PayPal payments through so valid payment methods, but to very kind of shady kind of accounts and companies that offer services that don't ever provide them when you pay them. What this does is it allows you to have an environment to basically transact those deals without having the additional cost of a kind of someone arbiting that deal, and allows you to have controls in terms of when payment is delivered or received based off of certain very kind of objective kind of touch points. And you could look at this through the insurance industry. You could look at this, and there's a lot of people who approach this from a social impact angle and kind of equality angle in terms of being able to take kind of components like racial bias out of decision making or out of kind of making loans. So if you think of loan officers at a bank, kind of decentralization can allow for kind of the disintermediation, if you will, of kind of someone who can inject their own subjective kind of bias into a decision-making process when if data says really there shouldn't be this component of subjective bias, if really default rates among these groups of people are the same, but our agents are likely to approve a loan for this particular group more than this other particular group, it actually leads to profitable outcomes for these organizations and for the people who are transacting. The other use case of decentralization is basically security. So if you think of a traditional database, there is one database that is the master. And maybe you have a mirror database that you update or you maintain in case there's a crash. But if someone hacks that main database and alters it, or if someone who has access to that main database alters it, who is supposed to, but maybe they are a bad actor, then something where all of that data is compromised. Whereas decentralizing a database basically means that any change that ever occurs to the database is recorded by all of the databases, because if it's not, then all of the other databases say, hey, this one database is wrong. And that is basically the idea of consensus.
In that case, would that make it more difficult to hack into something? Is that like part of the point in the decentralization? Like when it comes to hacking and security and things of that nature?
Yeah. So it's, and especially with the currency sort of component. And so it's the only reason really why cryptocurrency has any ground to stand on against banking, is that basically what banks do is they process and clear transactions. But essentially, if you can think of, okay, well, there's a blockchain cryptocurrency service that can make sure this money hasn't been laundered. And there's a blockchain cryptocurrency service that can track that this actual transaction occurred and allow reporting to both parties in terms of confirmation the transaction has occurred. And there's another app that can allow for the tracking of this transaction for personal finance and accounting, or maybe that even one app, who knows. But basically, if you have that, you've effectively taken all of these components of kind of a traditional system and basically made them automated where a human doesn't have to interact with them. Verification doesn't need to occur. because the verification is all handled autonomously. There's another interesting, so these are kind of more application sort of use cases that I'm talking about now. But what's another really good way of kind of looking at the benefit of decentralization is kind of comparing it more to internet. And so there's an idea that if you have 10 people in one room who all access the same web page, that web page probably gets sent through a series of servers. So probably you have probably 5 or 10 connections, and all 10 of the people who requested that web page have to go through those same connection points. However, if you took that same web page and sent it to one of the people there, and then had that person send it to all of the other people there, that actually takes less bandwidth. And so there's an idea as well that using decentralized networks can essentially allow people to use each other's processing power. It can allow each other to create local internets. So basically the idea that if telecom satellites go down, or telecom in a specific region goes down, the people there could basically link, their phones could automatically link together and basically pass data between each other. So there's a big component of efficiency here as well, which when you think about how much energy technology uses in general, is something that is a pretty interesting kind of prospect.
Matt, would you be comfortable if I asked you to kind of discuss the different similarities with regards to blockchain and crypto? Like, are they the same thing? Are they separate things? What are those things, or how do they interact with each other?
No, that's a great question. You can think about, and so there's a third layer here that's not even, that you kind of haven't mentioned as well, that's basically distributed ledger technology. And so distributed ledger technology is the concept that I was explaining in terms of basically a database that's stored in multiple locations and that's managed through the consensus of all of the other kind of members of that database system, to basically agree that a new record should be created or should be edited. So that's decentralized ledger technology. The layer above that is basically blockchain, which is a form of decentralized ledger technology. And then sort of off to the side, so those are kind of the relation between those, is you can have cryptocurrencies that are blockchain-based cryptocurrencies or based off of other decentralized ledger technology. So an example of this is Hyperledger, is slightly different to blockchain. Bitcoin, for instance, is based off blockchain. Ethereum is based off blockchain. But there are other kind of less common cryptocurrencies and projects in and of themselves, basically infrastructure that people have built that are other forms of decentralized ledger technology. And basically any project or company that issues a token or a coin is effectively at that point a cryptocurrency. Because you have something that can be traded on cryptocurrency markets. There are certain cryptocurrencies that are really designed to be currencies, and other cryptocurrencies that are much more designed to be basically the right to transact within a platform. So you can think of Ethereum tokens as actually tokens to use and build decentralized applications on top of Ethereum's language and smart contracting system. And so that's why you'll often see a lot of people talking about how this company that's raising a ton of money isn't a protocol. And basically the idea of apps raising huge sums of money is a little bit weird to people even in the cryptocurrency space. But if you think about Ethereum, which could have hundreds, even thousands of companies building apps on top of Ethereum, and needing to use Ethereum tokens to basically run these apps, then you could potentially see how some of these market caps are justified if these become TCP level protocol that everyone is using. The difference here is that And there's an entire other layer of kind of this conversation that is some of these companies are structured in ways where the founders stand to make tons of money if the technology takes off. Others are structured in ways where actually the core technology has been open sourced and basically put into a separate foundation. And sometimes, so that's the case of Ethereum. And sometimes the founders will also start a company that's very related to that company. Other times, really, they've just created an ecosystem infrastructure sort of technology. And basically their benefit is they get a bunch of tokens because they created the platform and can basically say, well, we get a bunch of tokens, or they're the first one who have access to buy them. And there's a lot of little ins and outs and niches to how you can structure those sorts of kind of fundamentals of one of these products. But at the end of the day, I think the thing that's important to keep in mind is there's a layer of people here working on technology that could be considered very similar to email process or internet networking or relay of information through satellites that basically could potentially or autonomous transactions where they're legally enforceable and executable contracts that basically someone has developed that anyone who needs an automatable contract can basically use this platform. And so you can see potentially if thousands of companies start to use that, those can be worth a lot of money potentially. And the tokens that are needed to be able to perform that can also be worth a lot of money.
So what do you think that opportunity is for people who... It's kind of broken, the idea of crypto and even decentralization is kind of broken into the mainstream, it seems, right? Where I can't go anywhere in Santa Monica these days without overhearing a conversation about cryptocurrencies.
I'm not surprised.
I don't know if that's like, if I can extrapolate to the rest of the country or
no,
world.
No. I was walking into the tube yesterday, and I mean, the walk from my flat to the tube is about maybe 50 feet. And I overheard people talking about crypto and the crypto space. So yeah. It's pretty common.
So that said, for lay people or people who aren't, inventing Ethereum or new cryptocurrencies, that's like a little beyond their grasp or whatever. Like, where's the opportunity for people to benefit from the growth of crypto as a market? Do you think that for regular people, it's in sort of embracing the ability to, if you're running a small business, should you be looking into accepting Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies as payment? Do you think that people should be looking for opportunities to build in that tooling space or some of those like network or protocol level spaces? Like, where's the most opportunity right now for people who are interested in crypto?
Well, and I think it's partially dependent on kind of what your skill set is. So, I mean, there's obviously, especially back last summer and through the end of last year, a lot of people from financial market backgrounds got into the space, and there's a lot of money for them to make. There still potentially is. That's very much dependent on the cryptocurrency market as a whole, in terms of kind of these tokens and the marketplaces you can buy them. And that's, I mean, very akin to traditional stock trading, except that you've never really seen the types of returns in traditional stock trading at such a broad level that you did in the crypto space last year. That's a financial decision that basically you need to make if you're going to go into that space at this point, though, because basically you're asking yourself, do I believe that these rumors are true that potentially Bitcoin could be worth $100,000 one day? And if you look at traditional tech, there's been a long-standing kind of history and habit of people massively underestimating the impact of some of these technology and value of a lot of these technologies. But on the other side of it, a lot of this technology is unproven. In the first wave of a lot of these kind of technical rollouts, a lot of the early leaders who look like they're going to be
the dot-com era.
Yeah, well, and a lot of those early leaders end up crashing and burning, and some of like the second place people who didn't commit so heavily to a specific position kind of are able to be a bit more flexible, or who chose a different technology. I mean, there'll always be the laserdisc VHS sort of argument. Right. So like, definitely the best technology doesn't always win. And there's certainly issues with Bitcoin as well, for instance, which is, I mean, the market leading in terms of cryptocurrency, and for a pure currency use case is really what Bitcoin is made for. And whether that is at the end of the day, the most efficient way of having a digital currency or not, it's probably not. But it's heavily, heavily adopted. And so what remains to be seen is, will people eventually shift to another currency? Will Bitcoin essentially become a lower transacted in terms of volume, sort of maybe gold standard-esque kind of currency? And maybe these smaller, lower price currencies that have, I mean, Bitcoin has a set circulation, so there can only ever be 14 million Bitcoins. But a lot of these other ones have infinite potential in terms of circulation, and make more sense as a consumer currency. So a lot of that will kind of suss itself out in terms of what these sort of platforms are. In terms of how to get involved, though, so I mean, there's the trading angle. Again, very high risk, though, because you're going into a market that last year grew by, I mean, about like 10, 20 times. So it's a lot to expect that to happen again. And if you're going into that with that expectation, it's probably not where you should be investing. If you're a developer, like, there's a lot of opportunity in terms of learning, I think it's because it's Solidity is the language of Ethereum, and learning these languages in general. I mean, there's so much money flying around in this space for developers and people working on really, really blue sky tech. I mean, earlier you mentioned that it's almost impossible to go up against these tech giants. The people who are doing it in interesting ways are doing it through like on post ICOs, because they know they need, I mean, a dev team of 20 with 2 years of runway to ever get a product to market that's going to be viable. And they can build a small piece of this, but then it'll get snapped up by one of these large tech companies, that all of them have blockchain divisions. Like Facebook, Google, Apple all have a blockchain division within them. So company and a lot of the corporate banks, a lot of management consultancy firms, a lot of big family offices are all already in this space. They're not saying it yet. Some of them are, but some, I mean, blue chip big four management consulting firms that I've spoken to have been in Ethereum since 2015, 2016. Without any announcement, without any fanfare, and likely at some point I could see a few things happening, and potentially those big players decide we want to pump the market and say that we're here, or potentially it crashes and burns and they get out. But back to how lay people can kind of, again, get into this market. So I say there is a component to, I mean, yes, it's hard to justify buying Ethereum now at, I think it fluctuates between $500 and $800 with any given day. Usually not that much within a single day, but within any given week or month, let's say. And so it's hard to justify that when it was cents, I mean, years ago. But also, if that goes up significantly, it's something where, I mean, there's an upside to be had in exposing yourself to the market in that sense. And so I've kind of, I mean, and frankly, I didn't do that until very recently in terms of starting to kind of hold more currency in kind of this space, just because it's something where I'm very risk averse myself. But there are benefits to actually holding that currency, as well as there are kind of products and platforms and systems that accept it as payment. So if you're running a business, you can really open up an entire potential customer type in terms of, especially if you're running something that has a technical audience. A lot of those developers have Bitcoin stored or Ethereum stored because they mined them, because they were the first people who jumped into this space, because all it really is at the end of the day for them is learn a new coding language and mine this virtual currency that's worth nothing. And so the people who were doing that back in 2009 now suddenly find that actually each currency you mined is worth $7,000 now.
Right, a lot more.
And so they want to put their money towards technically interesting projects. They are a lot of the people funding a lot of the projects in the space because they see developers they like working on projects that they think are cool and say, you know what, like, I don't know how to cash out my cryptocurrency in some context, or there's a lot of legal issues around potentially doing that, or just a headache in terms of reporting it to my bank. I might as well just go put it in a company that I like and then down the line deal with capital gains or however I'll actually get this money out once it's regulated.
Yeah.
Well, not that it isn't, and not that you can't get your money out, but it is a headache. I mean, we have to figure out how to liquidate our monthly burn to be able to spend things. And since I've started doing that work, two of the banks that I was using have stopped accepting the transactions.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Yeah, I think Europe is a bit of a different story for some of this as well. But it'll be very interesting as well in terms of how this kind of emerges in the States, especially with, I mean, legislation like net neutrality and things like that coming in, which actually could shoot decentralization entirely in the foot.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other conversation, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's a whole other one. And I think that they're actually having trouble making that whole thing kind of happen. But
I hope so.
Yeah.
I never really rounded up my answer to your last question. I'd say so. Accepting cryptocurrencies is a great way as a business to just like at least dip a toe in and figure out how to have a digital wallet and these little pieces that sound scary. And when you think about sending, I mean, a couple thousand dollars through basically to a string of numbers as an address, and if you type in one number wrong, that money's lost forever. It's a little scary. But when you go through the process, yeah. You realize that it's actually, I mean, you copy the number, there's no, then paste the number, so there's no way it can ever go wrong. There's, you always make a small transfer first, so you don't accidentally, something goes wrong and you lose a large sum of money, you make sure that small transfer goes through first. So there's little pieces that once you've kind of gone through it, it's much more accessible. And I think that's also, I think the biggest kind of cap on this market is how many people are actually engaging in it. If you look at South Korea, 25% of kids, kind of teens and young adults there have cryptocurrencies.
Whoa.
Yeah. So there's South Korea.
Oh, yeah.
So there's markets, and especially like if you think about, I mean, China and Asian markets, like they are so mobile friendly already that this makes a lot of sense there.
Like
they already are largely decentralized, and networking has been something that has been very high performance there for a long time. But at the end of the day, a lot of the applications from decentralization are networking, are speed, are efficiency, and are the ability to transact in verifiable ways without having to have some sort of intermediary. And so I think that, I mean, in all honesty, the U.S. is left out of a lot of these conversations about cryptocurrency. There are, definitely. I mean, Coinbase and a couple of monster companies there who are working on it. But if you look at the people leading the space, it's Southeast Asia, it's Eastern Europe, it's London and the Netherlands, it's, I mean, all over. And it's a lot of decentralized teams. It's a lot of teams with developers working all over the world remotely with each other, which I guess aligns pretty well. No, so I was just kind of circling all the way back. So I'd say the best place to start as a business in terms of kind of getting a toe is just accept some payments in cryptocurrency. I mean, look at the stories of 50 Cent who like accepted some payments for his album, and those payments are worth millions. Actually, we back in 2013 or 14 or so, at a company I was working for, accepted, we only ever had one person asked to do it, but we sold one of our products for one Bitcoin. And that, I mean, basically became worth 10 times its value and was a nice little kind of windfall for the founder there years later.
I just have one last question. Mm-hmm. Is there anywhere in the near future, you know, because at least in the U.S., although you hear people talking about cryptocurrency on every corner, I don't know that most people have a real depth of understanding of it. But having said that, Is there somewhere where we're going to start seeing this in the near future that's going to show up in a more common area?
So I definitely think so. And there's a few reasons and a few ways it's happening. So a while ago, you guys might be familiar with the idea that there's Bitcoin, but there's also Bitcoin Cash. One of the big problems with Bitcoin is it takes a lot of energy and it's difficult to transact. The transactions don't actually happen that frequently. And so Bitcoin Cash was sort of designed for smaller transactions, so potentially retail and merchant settings. So there are people approaching it in how they're creating tokens. There's also people approaching it from the standpoint of, I mean, for instance, in New York, I was there maybe like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I saw Bitcoin ATM in just like a bodega. So like, it's there. Apparently, they charge insane transaction fees, but they do exist. And the more and more those exist, the more and more people will start to use them and the more and more demand there'll be for them. So there's certainly a snowballing effect here that really started to pick up, I think, a lot with the kind of market boom last year. But I mean, I think even like 5 or 6 years ago, like Overstock.com and sites like that were saying, we're going to start accepting Bitcoin. And look how good of a decision that was for them. Although obviously hindsight is 2020. So I think that's part of it. And then I think the last piece is, so you are seeing this much more ubiquitously in countries outside of the US, not necessarily everywhere, but for instance, all of the challenger banks for the most part in the UK are talking about cryptocurrency. And so I use a bank called Revolut. And while they will not let me transact from cryptocurrency exchanges or withdraw my or deposit my money from them, they will and they have basically a way. So they're multiple currency accounts usually because Europe is usually a bit higher priority around those sorts of considerations. But I can also hold money in, I mean, basically virtual Ethereum, Ripple, Bitcoin Cash, Bitcoin. I think I have like 6 cryptocurrencies that I can basically say, I want to convert £5 into Ether each day and save it into a vault in case it kind of spikes. Or even just hold it as an account and just convert my pounds into whatever cryptocurrency I want. And so those sorts of applications are certainly making it much more accessible for people to dip a toe in. There's another site called eToro, sort of the European version of Robinhood, the kind of stock trading platform. And Robinhood, I mean, I think maybe like 6 months ago or so announced that we're going to allow cryptocurrency trading. Those are sort of sandbox [S2] Yep. [S1] Trading environments. You're not actually really using like Ethereum or Bitcoin as they were intended there, because you're just using kind of a piece of software as opposed to owning kind of the coins themselves. But still, if someone does that, makes a fair amount of money when the market goes up, they're now going to be, I mean, pretty incentivized to continue learning about this space and evangelizing this space. So I think as more that happens more and more, there's likely to be a snowballing effect. And whether it's Ethereum or Bitcoin or a platform that comes in to replace them, so maybe something like Ripple for Bitcoin, or maybe something like EOS or Hashgraph or something like that for Ethereum, unless those companies get largely disrupted, generally there's not really too much reason why the value of these platforms would go down unless there's major security flaws or something like that, which there don't seem to be. I mean, there's never been a major breach in any of these platforms in the entire time they've been running. There have been breaches on the exchanges and the applications built on top of them, but the actual technology themselves has not been breached. And so as long as that doesn't happen, maybe some companies will win and lose, and some currencies will crash. And I mean, there's instances of, I mean, $300-400 million being stolen at a single time, but that is hacking into a centralized database, which is what the exchanges are usually using. And they started moving to decentralized databases, but basically that's a legacy problem from the old system. So it's interesting because basically as long as that doesn't happen and more people move into the space, the pressure is on these prices to go up.
I feel like I have more questions now than I did when we started this.
That's how I felt for the first month or so. I think there's some other people you should have on this call potentially, because I think they might be able to answer some of your questions from a more technical angle, from a more market angle. What I say, where I really come at it from, is how to justify some of these companies raising hundreds of millions of dollars. And I think you hit the nail on the head, Mike, in terms of, well, you need that to go build infrastructure technology against the likes of Google and Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no opening. I mean, I would be astonished if a new company came along, like take like a Snapchat. Like those guys are never going to out Facebook, right? The only way that they become like a Titan-like company is if they do something radically different. Like some hardware thing or something. I don't even know, but then they're going to just get stomped by Apple. they're like in a really tough position. And I feel like that's the, the vast majority of startups entering into the traditional web and app space are the best outcome that they could hope for is to be where Snapchat is today, which is like getting, I can't think of a PG way to say what's happening to Snapchat, but the big four, you know, they're not playing well. And so it's just like, you know, I think that cryptocurrency represents an opportunity for a huge or several huge Titan like companies to kind of come along. Coinbase is one of them. Coinbase is like bigger than Merrill Lynch now or something. I forget what I was reading, but it's just like those guys have sprung onto the scene and are, extremely competitive to Wall Street, you know?
The exchanges, the amount of money going through them is insane.
It's stupid. No, it's ridiculous. But it's exciting. It's cool. I'm glad that we had this discussion because, you know, historically when we have talked about cryptocurrency, it's usually been to kind of like highlight funny articles that come out of the space or some of the sillier things because there's a lot of room for satire. But there absolutely is something here. And it's definitely going to be like we'll see huge companies come out of this space. I'm really excited to see that. So, yeah, I'd love to keep more conversations going, keep diving into this in the future. But for the time being, thank you so much for coming on today.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. With us.
Absolutely.
Thanks again,
Matt. Thanks so much.
Thanks for tuning in. For more information, head over to foxhole.fm. That's foxhole.fm. If you have any questions, please email us at feedback@foxhole.fm. And if you're enjoying what you hear, please leave us a great review on your favorite podcast platform or iTunes. Thanks again for listening.